Hello, you're listening to People, Pets, and Vets with Dr. Brad Miller and registered veterinary technician Angel Martin.
Hello.
Each week we bring you current events and news in the veterinary industry and share our thoughts and perspective on how they impact us in our animal hospital. We also try to give you an insight and behind-the-scenes glance at our clinic and the people in it. This episode 56 is being brought to you by Georgia Veterinary Associates, a family of animal hospitals caring for your family pet. Today?
Today is April 5th.
It's April 5th, not April Fool's, April 5th.
We didn't have any fun April Fool's jokes.
No, we thought about it, but everybody was so stressed out about what's going on.
With everything else.
As you know, Angel, we split our staff into two crews. Did we talk about the name?
We didn't.
So Team Russell and Team Ridge. The initial team, which is now known as Team Russell, they named themselves the A-Team.
Awesome.
Number one. Yeah. Team Awesome.
They started totally went to their heads.
Going down, did I hand select them and all this stuff? And in the end...
Someone did ask me, was there any strategy? Yeah. I'm like, of course there was some thought and strategy that went into the schedule, but not like... who's best and who needs to go on Team A.
There were some individual considerations.
Diversity for sure, like people's current schedules and that kind of stuff. So there was definitely thought that went into it, but I just thought it was really funny that people, staff members were like, oh.
But it kind of created a little bit of competition, which is not necessarily bad.
No.
So Team Russell did an awesome job the first 4 days. Team Ridge, awesome job the last 3 days of the week. Team Russell is back on for the start of their second shift. Mm-hmm. So they're on for three, and then Team Ridge comes on for four.
Speak about the name, because you're so proud of it. So Team Russell and Team Ridge, and together they're Russell Ridge Animal Hospital.
Yeah, so they're a team. I mean, nobody can do anything individually. And I like a little bit of the competition, but I don't like anybody to feel lesser, because we're all super important. So, yeah, everybody's doing a great job, by the way. Thank you, Team Russell Ridge and Team GVA as well. So, everything, I guess we got off on this tangent because no April Fool's joke. Dr. Evans had wanted to contact Team Ridge on
Wednesday,
day before they were on the first, and say, where are you guys at? Why did y'all not show up for your shift?
Yeah.
But we decided not to do that. So we didn't want to panic anybody.
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
All right. So recent events, happenings, COVID-19 still
heavily
eating,
among
breathing,
us.
Sleeping COVID-19.
For sure.
And I guess, we'll get into stories that are related to that. But I guess I just wanted to kind of talk about, we're still doing the curbside service. That's not going to go away for at least a month.
Correct,
You and I talked earlier today. I really feel like that's something that we will want to provide here at Russell Ridge moving forward in some form or fashion, whether it's running out medications or food to clients while they wait in the car, or, perhaps going out and getting, getting the pet, bringing it in for a nail trim, bringing it back out. So, hopefully there's a lot of bad that's kind of happening right now, but I think there's gonna be a lot of good things moving forward.
Yeah, we're trying to make the best of a
everywhere
awful situation, for sure. So
so
looking at the light at the end of the tunnel, hopefully trying to see what we can adopt. And I mean, our team has done so well in adapting to all of this so quickly, but is there something that moving forward we can pull
that
out of
sticks,
this
yeah.
and make it a permanent piece of our services moving forward?
And so yesterday I came in, I wasn't really on the floor, but I've been coming in every day just to kind of make sure, my support is or is not needed and be here. Yesterday I took on a new, not title, but I learned a new task.
Okay.
I am now the, maybe the third videographer.
Okay.
For
cool.
GVA.
Yeah.
I think Jen and little sister Rhonda would be one and two. Not sure what the order is. Probably
Jen is number one.
I'm thinking.
For sure.
Jen had told me how to set things up, and I actually had to FaceTime her to get it all working the other day. But
I'm not surprised.
I don't know. I kind of helped. We're doing a little bit of a. It's not really a PSA, but I think we're going to push out an email.
A campaign.
Yeah, a campaign to most of our clients that in my whole thought process is, during these crazy times, you know, we're asked to be sheltering in place, and we're not having much social interaction unless it's immediate family or coworkers.
Mm-hmm.
And so kind of the message is, you know, during these times when you and maybe your pet are feeling kind of alone, you're not alone as far as the medical and surgical side of things, that your GVA animal hospital is here for you and the staff.
For sure.
And so we're gonna kind of launch a little hashtag GVA strong campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to get a lot of footage for that yesterday.
Yeah.
And I'm super excited. But for those of you who don't really know me, when I get excited about something and I think I'm right and I think it's going to take over the world, I just feel that way. And it's not always the case, but it makes me feel good. And I get super passionate about things. So I'm super excited about that. I want to hopefully we can get that pushed out in the next couple of days.
Sure.
And kind of build on that and also help kind of build up our team and have them interacting and working together a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, even while video is kind of, I don't know what it is, stressful in and of itself, I think it has provided a lot of our staff something else to think about. Do you know what I mean? Like, Rachel specifically, she's done a really good job about being a voiceover and then also having a speaking part and a video part. It was so goofy and so stressful for her originally, but I think she really came out on top of it.
Yeah, everybody's getting more comfortable. So I think I shared with you, so a couple of milestones. We talk about Rachel, and yeah, she was very reluctant, and we're just like, no, you need to do it, you need to do it. And she went ahead and conformed, and then actually after she did the first one, she's like, can we do another one?
Right.
Let's do another one.
Right.
And so,
because all the fear and anxiety is gone, and now
somewhat,
it's like
somewhat,
a challenge to perfect your skill the next time.
Right. Somewhat contagious, you know, and it's very much like the podcast. I absolutely hated it the first 25 times I did it, but I'm starting to get a little more comfortable. But Katarina, she did a video with the hashtag GVA strong and let me video her interacting with some of the animals and doing some of the treatments. I was absolutely shocked.
Okay.
Our friend Natalie.
Okay.
Right. She has refused to come on the podcast. And she stepped up last week multiple times, has
twice
gone on
least.
Video. And so, yeah, it's kind of cool. Everybody is doing that. I shared with you right before we started recording this that when I was going around yesterday, they really started liking it. And they would turn and start, you know, kind of playing to the camera and waving. And it's kind of cool.
Which is what we've always hoped for, right? Like, if we could just always have a camera on the floor, that it would become a normal state of events. And so I think, again, looking at the bright side of things, trying to be optimistic in a world that's, you know, so unsure right now.
Maybe
I think
we
that's something that's really come out of it for us.
Yeah, and we can show a little bit more to our clientele and others what we do and what really goes on behind the scenes, and also let them see a little glimpse of us. You know, we're going to do some of the video that we put out on the GVA Strong. It, you know, maybe a little corny, a little goofy. I don't know if Jen will leave the edit in at the end of my hashtag GVA Strong. And then I went, nailed it, like your sister did. And we were making fun of her. And so she kind of left that in on our internal one. But anyway.
Maybe we'll have just a plain old blooper reel.
A blooper reel, yeah. I definitely have asked her to keep track of the blooper reelage, which there's going to be plenty of it.
Oh,
so,
sure.
Stories. You want to jump into stories, or you want to talk word of the week?
Yeah, I was just going to kind of go back a little bit with you and your video about giving the clients an inside look at kind of what we do behind the scenes here at an animal hospital. But again, that's plugging the video, the virtual video conferences and what we're doing, the virtual visits
virtual
here
visits
in the practice.
In the room, yeah. Yeah.
That is one more reason why we're just trying to bring people still into the clinic. We never want there to be a trust issue with a client and what we do in our practice. And so those visits, even though we are socially distant and we're taking your pet out of your car and bringing it into the hospital and you're staying outside, we're trying to bring you in a video, and so that you're still a huge part of your pet's health and you know exactly what we're doing and when we're doing it.
Challenging. I had a couple of cases last week, a couple of orthopedic consults, and I really try to spend a lot of time with owners when their pets have some of these major surgical diseases,
mm-hmm.
because it's a big deal and it's overwhelming, and they need to understand why we need to do what we need to do. And it's a little challenging trying to show on video.
You use a lot of tangible things.
Yeah, I'm drawing and I'm touching and showing and using my hands. And so maybe this will spark me to put together maybe a more robust package that can be shared and maybe illustrate a little more than me doing it every individual, you know, every time during the visit with the individual.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Well, that's enough for my kind of plugging of what we're doing and how awesome I think we're adapting to all this stuff. So let's jump into the word of the week.
Okay. So
last week
we talked about paresis, P-A-R-E-S-I-S, which basically we decided was neurologic weakness. And this week's word of the week, the reason I came up with this word is because every time we watch Dr. Birx and Dr. Fauci on White House, we always go to whitehouse.org.
Fauci. Yeah.
F-A-U-C-I, Fauci.
Yeah, Fauci.
Every time I watch them, they always talk about mitigation, and we've got to mitigate and the mitigation. Yeah. And, you know, I know what the word means. I couldn't give you the absolute definition right now, but they're just using that all the time as far as trying to help us control this disease. And so mitigate rhymes with micturate. M-I-C-T-U-R-A-T-E, micturate. Micturition or micturate.
Okay.
And if I can share with the audience, I'm not sure you knew what that was. I kind of gave you a little hint. Maybe you were going down the road. I'm like totally throwing you under the bus.
Who,
right now.
Me?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I didn't know what it meant.
Yeah.
I had to look it up.
So what does micturate mean?
Well, let's play a little game with the audience, right? See if they can figure it out. It is opposite of defecate.
Well, it's not opposite. I mean, A-N or amicturate would be, so it's not opposite, but it is, oh my gosh.
When you talk like number one and number two, which like every American understands, or probably every human being.
So number two would be?
Defecate.
Defecate or defecation, and number one would be?
Micturate.
Micturate. Or micturition.
The act of urinating.
So yeah, micturate means urinate. And I don't know. I mean, it's all in the whole Greek Latin roots, that kind of a thing. But
that one's totally way over my head. But
I can't think of another word that uses "micked" to relate back to urination or urine.
No, because like everything is like anuria, dysuria. It's all of those things. But this is truly, this micturate is truly the act of urinating. And so that's what defecation is. It's the act of passing stool.
Of defecating, yeah.
And so
we're listening to a veterinary podcast now.
yeah, all things gross, right? But I don't know, like anuria, dysuria, all those things, polyuria, like all of that stuff has to do with the urine itself, not the act of.
I'm going to look it up in Dorland's Medical Dictionary as we speak, and this is not one of my better skills, looking things up in a dictionary for some reason.
You know it's alphabetical, right?
I do know that. But I can't think in blocks or, you know, the heading. What do you call the two words? There's two columns on each page. What do you call the... So they have the first word of the page is on the left, and then the last word is on the right. And so I have a hard time processing that and quickly looking for things.
Well, you're still on M-I-C-R.
I'm finding it.
So
micturate, M-I-C, that's Greek, mict. Miction. Oh, I didn't know that. Micturition, I knew meant the passage of urine, but miction means urination. Micrurus is a genus of venomous snake.
So does it put the root word and the subword together?
It's weird. That is the only, there's no other words that I can see. Miction, micturate, and micturition.
Now
and
I don't feel bad.
There's nothing else related back to that being related to urine or urination.
I really thought I was not very wise by not knowing that when you mentioned it earlier.
This is another one of those words that Dr. Clark in our physiology class early in vet school, you know, when he did the two definitions a day just to make you learned.
So when I started working at Hamilton Ridge almost 10 years ago, you don't know this because you obviously didn't work there with me, but I used to do what is called veterinary vernacular, and I would put up a word of the week for the rest of the staff. Did you know that?
Nope.
Yeah. Victoria Dahl used to help me with it, and granted, our staff wasn't much bigger then than it is now. 1.5 doctors, 3 to 4 support staff.
Where did you get the words? You just... Made them up?
So
or?
I was fresh. I'm not necessarily fresh out of school, but I was fresher out of school. And so I was enrolled in a lot of like words of the week that came through my inbox and things like that. And so I just kind of would open things. And if I thought it was a neat word, I would share it with the rest of the staff.
Cool.
Yeah. But all I called it veterinary vernacular.
Veterinary vernacular. Say that 10 times fast.
I don't think I could.
All right. Let's jump into some news stories. So my brother Alan yesterday, I believe, told me that Texas A&M was somehow involved in coronavirus. The diagnostic lab, the veterinary diagnostic lab, was somehow involved in corona testing. And I told him, oh, I didn't know that. That's cool.
Of pets or of people? Or
so I looked it up right before we started the podcast. And my understanding is they're repurposing a lot of the veterinary testing materials, and they're putting them together to make a on-site
collection
rapid test kit for people.
So this I don't is think the whole antibody test thing?
I don't know. I didn't read that deep in the story to see exactly, you know, the particulars, but they're repurposing animal test kits and making them into a human coronavirus test kit. Probably not testing there locally, but giving them to the human health.
So can we talk about the whole antibody test? So by the way, you talked about Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx. When Dr. Birx gets on those...
Dr. Scarf.
Yes, she has quite the array of scarves. Yeah. But there's something so soothing about her. And I told you this before, like I could just listen to her talk. She's so poised. She's so confident. Like she is.
Yeah.
Very soothing.
Very soothing. Very commanding. I mean, you just know the knowledge base is there and you trust her, I think. Maybe trust.
Yeah, there's a bit of trust for sure. But anyways, when she was talking about that whole under-level thing that she wants to start testing antibody testing and that kind of thing. So we do antibody testing in animals.
We do. We do antigen and antibody.
And so antibody testing just basically means that your body has seen this before. So if we start doing antibody testing, doesn't mean you're a carrier, right? It doesn't mean that you are an asymptomatic carrier and you're going to give this to someone. Doesn't it just mean that you have seen it?
Your body's been exposed and mounted an antibody response to it. But the problem, I think there's a lot of problems that we don't know. The problem in animals is there are a lot of different coronaviruses, and we know with almost 100% certainty most cats get exposed to a coronavirus early in life,
mm-hmm.
and most of them do not develop disease. But down the road, with this particular coronavirus, a lot of these cats will develop clinical signs of feline infectious peritonitis, FIP. And it can be when they're I've seen a 20-year-old cat develop FIP, and it's where their body starts overreacting against the viral infection. So there's a lot of weird stuff. I did not know that coronavirus was a major player in the human respiratory disease complex like it is. I never really knew that. So I think there's a lot, my point being, I think there's a lot of unknown. You or somebody sent me a story a few days ago, or I read it, about maybe this whole current coronavirus started in bats. It was a horseshoe bat. Did you read that?
No, it wasn't me. But they all thought this anyways. There was some, supposedly this all originated from some guy eating an undercooked bat in China.
Well, right? The last thing I read was a horseshoe bat in a research facility next to the Wuhan wet market within a mile or two. And they feel like that this article stated that they felt like that has to be the source, and it somehow got out of that laboratory and made its way into the wet market, whether that's, you know, by human fomite or I don't know. But there's all these theories. It's almost like conspiracy theories going
around. There's a ton of conspiracy theories. Like, you could definitely go down the rabbit hole reading all the conspiracy theories online. I do not suggest anyone do that. I was talking with my parents about it last night and all the different thoughts and that kind of stuff. It gets very bizarre.
Also, though, you know, so Texas A&M, whoop, helping out kind of public health wise, LSU, they are, I think they made some type of a culture or test medium, and you know, on the veterinary side for the human application, and then several veterinary maybe specialty groups, critical lists, maybe even universities have been donating ventilators to the human side for need. And there's not, we don't have that many. That's not a common.
So that's what I was going to say. We looked at purchasing a ventilator for our practice here at Russell Ridge years ago,
right.
Or maybe a year or two ago, just to kind of have, but it's not something we use every day. It would be something when you did like a thoracotomy or surgery
What's
into
that
the
mean?
Chest.
What's a thoracotomy?
Surgery into the chest cavity or like even a hernia procedure, like a hiatal hernia where the diaphragm is affected. So those kinds of things. But typically we're able to manually ventilate for these pets.
Yeah.
And so we never really found the use of a ventilator.
So I misspoke a little bit. LSU and Oregon State University are making viral transport medium for COVID-19 tests. The medium is a sterile fluid that protects the genetic material on swabs until they reach a testing lab, and veterinary labs routinely make VTM and already had the needed equipment, says Justin Sanders, head of molecular diagnostics at OSU. So that's kind of cool.
It's very cool.
That's kind of cool that everybody's pitching in, trying to help.
Well, remember the whole One Health deal that we've talked about multiple times where
you don't hear that these days because of the panic and with the pandemic, I guess. But
yeah.
I think maybe full circle at the end or as this thing dies off, we are going to see how everybody kind of worked together to get there. I really, really hope still at this point, there's no absolute proof that animals can get the disease and or transmit it to other pets or people. And I really hope that they are not an infected species.
I would hope so
too. I hope
too.
It's super
species specific.
I still think
that there are some, I guess, areas where people are still surrendering their pets. But what I was going to say is you have something on here as a quote unquote cases we're seeing in the practice. One positive thing I think we've really seen is new pets coming into the household.
Yeah, we've seen more new puppies per week over the last 2 weeks than ever.
Than we typically see in a month, for sure. And I think that's really exciting in one aspect, in the sense that these people are, I guess, multiple aspects, right? So these people are adopting pets, or they're getting pets because the pet stores are closed, right? Like, you can't go to Petland Mall of Georgia and buy a pet right now. But so they're getting them from shelters or from maybe mishaps. You know, my neighbor accidentally had a dog that bred, something like that. And so rather than all these pets going to the shelter, other families are taking them on. Probably because they have more time at home to spend with them. But how exciting is it? And this is one of the things that, like, when people ask me, like, what do you like about veterinary medicine? My answer is always super cheesy.
Oh boy.
It is the human-animal bond. It's to see the love that people have for their pet and how we can nurture it from the veterinary side of things, right? And so to see new families bring in a new puppy or a new kitten, that
joy.
Is like so exciting to me.
Okay, so pause.
You don't like my cheese factor. It's fine.
No, that's good. it flows right into the next thing I wanted to talk about.
Okay.
So bear with me. Give me 30 seconds to set this up. I feel like the people I talk to that are staying at home, personally that I talk to or that I know of, you know, my household, other households, everybody that is having to shelter in place because they're not allowed to go to work or other places, people are getting a little punchy.
Oh, sure.
Right. So we heard early on during when this started that there was an expectation that there would be a huge baby boom 9 months from now because people are indoors.
Absolutely.
A week later, we hear there's going to be a huge rise in divorces because people are forced to be together.
Yeah.
And probably not going to be, you know, having babies. And so the one thing that people aren't really talking about. So think if you're a pet that's home. And normally your humans get up at 6 o'clock and they leave at 7 to 7:30.
Yes.
And then they come back at 6:30 in the evening. You've got the house by yourself, to yourself if you're a pet.
And or you're crated.
Yeah, or you're crated. So that could be a positive. But I was kind of going like the pets, they're used to having all this downtime.
It's
they're
still
sleeping.
A total disruption of their day.
So exactly. So now we have these humans that are home all day, and they're taking Rover to the park. They're taking Felix to the park on a leash. Felix would be a cat.
The cat.
That, yeah, on the leash that I saw the other day.
Not advised.
They're playing with these animals, and then we've gotten a couple of calls, you know, that owners are concerned about their pets because at the end of the day, they're sluggish, they're lethargic, they're not acting right, they're sleeping when normally they would be, you know, wanting to watch TV. And a lot of times it's because of the human interaction during the day. They're exhausted. So, but I didn't really think about, you know, the pets that maybe are sleeping in their crates. You know, maybe some of them, depending on their personality, maybe they are truly enjoying their humans being home, you know, more.
So I wonder
if they're going to get depressed when everything gets back to normal.
So I don't know. I mean, yes and no. It's kind of like a weekend, right? So you do the same kinds of things that we're doing now on a Saturday and a Sunday with your pet. But I haven't seen any news articles about it, but I've definitely seen personal friends and family members of mine post things on Facebook like, my dog's staring at me like, why are you still here? And there's lots of memes about it and that kind of thing. My mom actually decided to take 2 weeks off of work. And she has been at home, and they have three dogs, and their little dog, she said, just aggravates her, jumps all over her, like, on the couch, off the couch. What are you doing? It's just such a thing. She's like weirded out about her just being at home with her. And so I don't know. I mean, I guess try to keep your pet's routine or their day as routine as possible.
Yeah.
Was my suggestion to my mom, but that's hard, right? Like, who wants to crate or kennel their pet when they're at home?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Consider the global vision or whatever, right? It's not all about you. It's not all about the pet. It's kind of working together, and what affects you affects your pet as well. So, last story, and then I think we probably need to close out. You sent me a story via text this morning about rats.
Oh, rats. No, yeah, I think it's actually super interesting. So, you remember last year, May, Lance and I took our first trip to New York City, and we were just astounded by the fact that every day is garbage day there.
Trash, yeah.
Like, that city produces so much garbage. It was insane. I mean, we're talking about like 6 feet high stacks of black bags.
So, yeah, every day they get it down on the street and they just throw the garbage down there until it gets picked up.
So crazy. This article actually put things into perspective that without people working and producing trash and garbage, the cities are having a huge rat population, which you would usually see these rats at night, right?
So usually you wouldn't see them.
Yeah, you wouldn't see them.
They're usually going to come out and they're going to go through the garbage and, you know, the leftover food that gets thrown out or spilled.
Right, exactly.
They come out when all the people are gone and feast.
At night. And now that there are no people ever, they're seeing more and more rats during the days. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know that the population is growing. I think just they're more active. And so now with them being more active on the sidewalks and things, they're urinating more in places. The big things about rats is that they carry leptospirosis among other diseases. But if you live in a big city or something like that, and you're walking your dog down the street, your dog could drink from, you know, sitting water on the sidewalk or step in something and then lick his paw and potentially become infected with leptospirosis, which then comes into the house. And so this whole COVID-19 thing is going to turn into a whole leptospirosis outbreak if we're not careful.
Yeah, so leptospirosis is transmitted exactly the same way coronavirus is transmitted.
Well, that's not fair.
It is, as far as the way you get the disease. It's through a mucous membrane.
But so
COVID-19 is not urinated, as far as I know, out of people.
Right. So it's through the respiratory droplets.
Yes.
And then leptospirosis essentially being through urine. But you have to absorb it.
And so that's the whole point. The conjunctiva of your eye, touch something infected with lepto, put it to your mouth. So, you know, I don't know about nose. I said nose, but I've never heard of that. But maybe.
I don't know. Possibly. Maybe.
So anyway, long story short on lepto, yes, in the inner cities, which leptospirosis has never been a problem to my knowledge, maybe it will become a problem. We typically recommend pets that are exposed to, quote unquote, the outdoors, be vaccinated, whether that's even, you know, a big fenced-in yard, because raccoons, other wildlife can carry it and get it in the environment, or, you know, a large farm. But it always is passed in small animals. It's always passed via the urine or urinary tract. And that's how the environment gets contaminated. And then a small animal would pick it up via mucous membrane transmission.
Right.
Whew, that was difficult. But
it is difficult. So time will tell. I'm hoping that these big cities are doing something to help control the rat population or possibly feed them. I don't know.
Let's don't feed the rats.
Well, they're animals.
They're not
too.
People. No, they're not people. What is it?
They
without
definitely
people, pets are simply animals. So there's no people on the streets.
Well,
so these
I know
rats
that they're
animals.
I understand that. But I'm just saying, like, I think we should control the population, but I don't think we need to eradicate them all.
Oh my gosh. What do you feel about cockroaches? Same?
Same.
Okay. All right. Enough said.
Although they don't really have, they're just ectoparasites, right? So it's like, or not ectoparasites, but they have an exoskeleton. So anyways, we can go down that because people think grass has feelings these days.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Let's stop that. Yeah. All right. Well, sign us out and we'll, hope that we see another week and can come back on in a week.
Yeah.
Just kidding. We definitely know that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Debbie Downer at the end of the show here. Check in next week, guys, as we discuss more in the news and in our industry. Follow us on Instagram at People, Pets, and Vets. Follow all of our clinics on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and check out our blogs on our website at mygvet.com. Also, under our resources tab on the website, you can listen to this podcast or please subscribe to wherever you're listening to it from. And remember, without people, pets are simply animals.
I'm going to add another sign off. Hashtag GVA strong.
Hashtag GVA strong.
Bye, guys.